the Award Podcast is brought to you by Naked City Brewery.
Well, hello and welcome, everyone. Welcome to the Air Raid Podcast. This is episode 209 in what is now officially considered a long and drawn-out series. I am your host, Aaron Roden, and this, of course, is the show where we drop bombs of awesome straight into your ear holes. Yes, indeed, folks, it's going to be a great episode. You know why? Because we're back. I've taken some time off. I've literally took a week off of from my fake job. This is my fake job. This is it. You are listening to my fake job. I literally took the week off from my fake job, guys. How sad is that shit? Welcome back. Welcome back to whatever this is. We've got a great episode for you this week. Oh my God. Spencer Moody, frontman for the band The Murder City Devils. They've got a new album out that is available right now. The White Ghost Has Blood on Its Hands Again, which is available at their wonderful website, themurdercitydevils.com. Go and check it out. We're going to feature some songs from there, from that new album, this week during our amazingly candid and very real conversation we have with Spencer Moody that we'll bring to you in a moment. Man, I was, you know, very nervous about having Spencer in the backyard. One reason is that I have seen him play many times, and he's full of energy, and he can be a bit of a dick on stage. Like, you know, I didn't know what to expect. And we talk about this. You know, it's very interesting to hear his realization. He had this point in time where he realized he can't do that on stage, right? And he didn't know why he was doing it. So we'll talk to him about that. And, yeah, I was just, you know, needless to say, I was scared to meet him, because, you know, on stage he's forced to be reckoned with, right? And, I don't do good in those situations. But it went really, really well. He's a sweetheart of a man, very smart, and has just some amazing things to say about his life and how he got to where he's at today, which is back as the frontman to the Murder City Devils in this new album, The White Ghost Has Blood on Its Hands Again. If you were a fan of the Murder City Devils, are still a fan of the Murder City Devils, this album is amazing because it's totally the Murder City Devils. Like, nothing has changed, right? Like, some of those bands, right, you hear, low-hanging fruit, folks, Red Hot Chili Peppers. You go back to their Blood Sugar Sex Magik album. Pretty damn good, solid album, right? They were all high on heroin. How can you not write a good song when your whole band's high on heroin? Great album. Then everything shits the bed, right? And now they're coming out with these, you know, just these awful, you know, I would say a take on a pop song, but they're not really even a pop song. They're just awful. That's all it is, right? Like, it started with Californication and has gone on from there. I don't even know the names of the albums now, you know. But that's what happens, right, with a band that that kind of goes away and then comes back and tries to reinvent themselves. That's what happens when you reinvent yourself. It goes to shit. The Murder City Devils have not tried to reinvent the wheel. They're just going and doing what they know how to do, man, which is make some pretty damn decent rock and roll music. So check it out, will you? TheMurderCityDevils.com. Let's see. We've got a couple emails here. that I think I want to get to next week. So we'll put that off again, once again. I hope you guys had a good week, man. It was kind of weird, right? Kind of a weird couple weeks since we talked last. Robin Williams died. I'll just say this on Robin Williams, his death, his suicide. Suicide is always awful, right? It hurts everyone. Especially with somebody like Robin Williams. He has so many fans and is known around the world. And people grew up with the guy, right? Like somebody like me, I grew up watching Robin Williams. However, I am not the type of person to get super sad when a celebrity dies. I don't know why. It's just not in my. I don't even know where to go from there. I don't know what the word is that I'm looking for, but it's not in my personality. There you go. That's a good word. That's a really hard one to remember, right? God, fucking damn it. It's not my personality to be obsessed with the celebrity life and death. And it kind of bugs me that so many people were. That's all I'll say about it. That's all I'll say about it. Luke Burbank had a great phrase for it. What was happening on like Twitter and Facebook was, what was it? Oh God, what did he call it? Competitive mourning. Competitive mourning. That's what he called it. And I thought that was a great explanation for what was going on in the social medias. Now, you know, to each their own, really. I mean, I've got nothing against you if you were mourning and if you, you know, were super sad by his passing. But I don't think, you know, if after 100 million people say it on Facebook, you know, what are you adding to the conversation, right? That's my 2 cents. My 2 cents, guys. That's it. I'm going to end it right there. Hey, you guys realize we still get sponsorship from Wonderful. You like that segue? You like it? Yeah, it's smooth, man. God, getting back into things after a week off from my fake job. We got sponsorship by the wonderful people over at Naked City Brewery and Tap House, located on Greenwood Avenue North here in beautiful North Seattle, right? God, man, they are doing some fantastic shit down there. Let me tell you, I went down there for the sibling rivalry show. They put on a show. Did you know that? We talked about it with Jeremy on this here program just a couple weeks ago. They did a show. They had Aaron Jones and a female musician called Whitney Monge. I think that's her name. Female musician. Listen to me. What was that supposed to mean? She's a musician. Just say musician Whitney Monge. Why did I have to say? I can take that out. Anyway, it was great. It was right there in the screening room. Had some great beers. They even like brewed a beer for sibling rivalry. What the fuck, man? Where's Air Raid's beer? Where's Air Raid's beer? Naked City? No, they're just they're fantastic people down there, doing a really great job of keeping this community alive in North Seattle, especially Greenwood, man. They're doing all sorts of great stuff. Eric Anderson from the band Cataldo, one of my favorite bands. Not even they're a local band, but they're one of my favorite bands. Gilded Oldies, their album that's out right now is freaking fantastic, and it's literally one of my favorite albums of the year. And he's playing by himself August 26th at 8 p.m. there in the screening room for the Naked Sessions. It's a benefit for 826 Seattle with Eric Anderson from Cataldo. So get that. It's $10 at brownpapertickets.com. And it should be a fantastic show. Plus, you can drink the Naked City beer, and you can, you know, eat the Naked City food, man. And where else are you going to do that? Not at Naked City. Wait, what does that? What's that mean? Wow. Let's just do this. Let's stop that. But thanks to NakedCityBrewing.com for sponsoring the show, of course. Ongoing sponsors, and after that little spot that I did for them, maybe no longer. Maybe they're going to pull the plug on it. We'll see. We'll keep you guys updated. Oh, shit. Okay, this is one of my favorite songs by the Murder City Devils off of the album In Name and Blood from 2000. The song is called Rum to Whiskey, and we'll be right back with more of the Air Raid Podcast for your ears with special guest this week, Spencer Moody. Lead singer of the Murder City Devils, back at it on tour, man. Go and check it out. The MurderCityDevils.com. Okay, rum to whiskey. And we'll be right back. Stay with us, everybody.
He switched from rum to whiskey. She was the only decent thing in a good for nothing town. She was the prettiest girl in an ugly town. He must feel sorry, I know. He hates sin. He switched from rum to whiskey.
Everything just based on, like, I have to think about parking, like, way ahead of time.
Oh, yeah, exactly, right? Yeah, I always get nervous when I drive, like, a big truck like that because, I mean, if you hit something, you're done,
yeah,
right? Or the other person is done.
Yeah. Oh,
much,
yeah, no, you kill someone so fast.
Yeah, yeah.
And in the past, I've driven a lot of large automobiles.
Well, I'm sure. Yeah,
mostly they've been, like, vans
that.
And stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
So that
yeah.
huge hood changes everything.
Right.
It's the one thing to have, like, a lot of length in the back, but it's another thing when you have that width and then you can't see in front so well.
Sure.
Even though you're high up, it's like.
Yeah. A buddy of mine let me borrow his truck, which was like this, like, 1984, like, Toyota, you know, the beast of a truck, right? Not giant, but you get what I'm saying. But so I loaded up a bunch of, like, just junk that needed to go to the dump. And I take off, and I'm not used to driving this thing at all. And I pop the clutch right when I take off into that main street.
Uh-huh.
And there's people coming behind me. I'm like, oh, shit. So then I have to get going. And then I hear just this loud bang, like somebody's shooting a gun. And it's like multiple of them. And I'm like, oh, God, what was that? I look behind me, and I lost all of my load.
Oh,
right in the middle of the street.
Jesus.
All this, like, hardwood flooring that I was actually going to sell. And now I had to just take straight to the dump because it was ruined.
Yeah.
You know, yeah.
Yeah.
That's my experience with driving a truck recently.
Yeah.
Yeah. Welcome to Truck Talk.
Yeah.
Spencer Moody joining me in the backyard. Thank you so much, man.
My pleasure.
Yeah.
This is
a big thing for me. I've been a fan of the Murder City Devils for a very long time.
Thank you.
And when your new album came out. A couple weeks ago, I jumped on the chance to have you guys here.
Cool.
And so stoked that you can be joining me.
Yeah, it's nice to be here.
So did the tour start yesterday?
Yes.
Yeah?
Yeah.
First tour, first date here in Seattle.
Correct.
How did
it
feel?
It felt good.
Yeah?
It felt good, yeah. It was a little nerve-wracking because we have new songs, and
That's a thing, right? Like, I mean, like when you're trying out new stuff in front of a big sold out crowd.
Yeah.
It's got to be nerve wracking.
It was like, I mean, it was literally like the first time I ever sang some of the songs without like the lyrics in front of
the
me.
The lyric sheets. Yeah. You forget any lyrics?
Oh, sure. Yeah. I mean, I don't know if I really forgot. I garble. Some of it was like not. But, you know, like the thing is that's sort of like my, it's kind of how I roll anyway.
Yeah,
in the end, it doesn't actually matter.
Yeah.
It's more for myself. I've never, I don't think anyone cares.
Uh-huh.
I just like to feel like I'm doing what I, like my job or whatever.
Yeah, yeah. Well, a part of your job is to yell into the microphone,
yeah.
So you can just
yell
replace
something.
That.
Yeah.
Replace some of the lyrics with a little bit of yelling,
yes.
And everything is fine.
Yeah.
That's great, man. That's great. Do you ever get, because you have a very unique, I would say, singing voice. You've got to be a little hoarse today.
Yeah.
Does that happen?
Yeah, but it's always been, I mean, when I started, I mean, singing is a generous way to put it. But
you're a vocalist.
Yes.
Vocalist.
When we started, when I started being in bands, it was like in basements with no monitors and crummy PA, and the band turned up as loud as their not huge amps would go.
Right.
And
just feedback.
I couldn't hear myself for, I mean, the first, like, so I used to be, the band that we sort of started in was called Area 51, and we played shows for probably about a year or so, and I never heard myself.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it was like I would yell as loud as I possibly could, basically just so that I could hear my own voice at all.
Right.
And, And there was another vocalist in the band. It was Andrea Zolo and I were both sang in the band. And sometimes we would show up places and there would only be one microphone. And so she would get the microphone and I would just yell as loud as I could. So the only adjustment I've really made since then is that I try to do it in a way that won't blow out my voice.
Sure, yeah.
Because I did. Yeah. I lost my voice once, and it was bad news.
Like on tour?
No, it was just a show in Seattle. It was a bumper shoot show, like a long time ago, my voice just it went from regular to sort of a lot of kind of like then kind of started cracking, and then just like. Literally, I could not make any sound out of my mouth aside from maybe breathing.
Sure,
it was like totally gone. And so after that, I sort of had to be a little bit more thoughtful about it. But actually, what's more important when we're going on tour is that that I've been using my voice. If that I've been using it so that it's kind of broken in a little bit.
Yeah,
it's actually better
yeah.
after it's gotten a little bit. Like all my rasp will stay for a while, and then if I don't do this, it'll go away.
Like if you
which is
keep on, if you don't keep on like training it,
yeah, more
bit?
Or less. I
yeah.
mean, I would training would be also used kind of the way
loosely
singing was used, but yeah, you know,
yeah, yeah,
but
yeah.
It's fine.
Yeah, well, good, good. I'm glad you're not like horse's shit and canceling on me because
yeah,
you can't
no,
talk.
No,
yeah.
No.
I get. That
I did
a lot.
Use this thing where my sometimes on tour, I'd get some kind of tear in my throat where my gag reflex would get like triggered really easily.
What?
And it was really difficult. It would become very, very difficult for me to drink alcohol,
yeah.
which was actually the primary problem.
Uh-huh.
You know,
yeah,
like
because
I was used to throwing up, I wasn't used to not drinking.
Not drinking.
But it didn't affect my ability to sing. It was just like I was clearly doing some kind of crazy damage to myself.
Oh, wow. Oh, my God. So take me back a little bit, man. Where did this all start for you? Where did music enter Spencer Moody's life?
Well, I was kind of a little bit of a lonely, troubled youth. And I just always had just music helped, you know. Like I,
Where'd you grow up?
I grew up in, I lived in Kirkland.
Oh, okay.
And then around my 13th birthday, we moved to Eastgate.
Gotcha.
So the east side.
Yeah.
Basically on both sides of Bellevue.
Uh-huh.
Like the Bellevue Square was kind of a cultural hub.
Have you been over there lately?
I've been over there basically since my parents left Bellevue. I've been over there a handful of times, and it's crazy.
It's insane now.
It's crazy.
Absolutely insane.
It's weird and crazy. And Kirkland is not necessarily the downtown is kind of weirdly the same, but like the residential little area where our home was when I was a kid is like
totally different.
Totally different. I went over there a few years ago to try to show my wife, and we just like. It was a very little, simple little neighborhood, and I was just, like, lost.
Yeah.
It was
crazy. Yeah.
It was really weird.
Yeah, Eastgate's totally different, too.
Oh, yeah.
Pretty much, you know. Uh-huh. And then definitely, like, that downtown center in Bellevue is just totally, I mean, unrecognizable from what it was 20 years ago.
Yeah.
You know? It's nuts. It's nuts.
Yeah.
But so what was the troubled youth part, man? Was it coming from home, or was it?
Oh, I was just like
just a regular depressed Washington teenager.
Yeah, I was just like a depressed kid.
Yeah,
I was sort of came into the world that way.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't really enjoy. I had a very supportive family. I have very loving parents that always did everything they could to help.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
I just came into the world sort of not. Didn't really enjoy being a kid.
Yeah.
And I hated school. I have like what at the time when I was probably in like second grade or something, I was diagnosed with dyslexia, which is probably, I think if the same tests were done on me today, probably I would be categorized something else. I think that time kids had dyslexia and now kids have ADD,
attention deficit disorder.
And then
disorder.
It's probably, in fact, exactly the same thing.
Right.
But, and so that made school difficult for me, and it made me feel, it was like, basically, I kind of would look around at school and feel like I was surrounded by dumbasses, and yet I was the person that couldn't get the work done.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It was like, it was difficult for
me. I know exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah,
I felt exactly the same way.
But you know what's funny about it that I didn't know at the time is that I was sort of more or less told there were these certain things that I was directly told by people that were in a loving way.
Yeah.
I was directly told there was all this list of things that I was just never going to be able to do and never be good at. And what I found is that...
By like your parents and stuff?
Yeah, totally.
Really?
And it seemed reasonable, you know? And it was what they were told, you know, by whoever. But then what I found is now I'll be 40 next year, and I feel like I've just been slowly learning how to do all of these things that I didn't
that
think that I would be able to do,
able
and a lot
do,
of it was just totally, like more like blocked by, sort of fear and insecurity.
Sure.
And I think a lot of it's just not being able to trust the part of your brain. Like this information that you take in, it's like, it's in there somewhere.
Yeah.
It's a matter of just being able to access it. And the way to access it is through being relaxed, not through being like uptight and working at it.
Yeah.
So,
I'm still fucking working at that, man.
Yeah, yeah.
Like that's a constant battle.
No, that's a for lifelong.
Oh my God,
that's like a lifelong thing.
Yeah,
but it's also exciting to be like learning new things and getting better at things and seeing like doing something and then realizing that was something that you didn't think that you would be able to do, and you've just done it effortlessly. And it's,
is being a vocalist, I'm taking it like being a vocalist is part of one of those things, right?
Sort of. I mean, the funny thing about it is that I've always done it, but I've always truthfully, not the reason that I've been in this band and that I've been able and been in other bands and had a life where I've always had a life that's basically in many ways been dedicated to music making, even though I've had many jobs and many other things and other creative outlets. The reason I do this is because Dan Gallucci first in the Murder City Devils, and then, and also I would say Derek Fidesco, who's in the Murder City Devils,
mm-hmm.
those guys gave me the opportunity to do something that there was absolutely no reason for anyone to think that I would be able to do.
Okay.
You know,
yeah.
Like they wanted me to be like I was the singer. I was one of the singers in their band, and that broke up, and they wanted to keep making music with me. And
that was
other
that
people,
you were singing in with the, it was the two singers.
Yeah. With me and Andrea Zolo. Right. And then we had a band called the Hookers after that. And then that sort of transformed into mm-hmm. Murder City Devils. And me and Dan played music when we were, like more high school aged also.
Okay.
It was not in the beginning. It was not something that I showed promise in, I don't think. And those guys sort of, I feel like, saw something in my personality that made uh-huh. them think that I would be able to do this thing.
Were they showing promise?
Oh yeah, totally.
Yeah.
Totally.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't, yeah, I think so. Yeah. And also the other thing is that, I don't know, but I can never remember the words, even in the simplest songs.
Yeah.
But the other thing that's crazy is that in the last few years I've started, practicing the guitar and then learning mm-hmm. songs and learning other people's songs. And if I'm playing the guitar and singing, the lyrics are totally there. Easily.
Yeah.
I can totally learn.
Because you can hear it. It's like an external thing, right? Like you can hear the music going and then that's triggering.
Yeah. And I think something about like, since I'm doing something with, I'm focused, my focus is somewhere else because I'm
sure.
a horrible guitar player. So yeah. I have to be focused on that. And then the words are just there.
Yeah, it comes back to the fear, man.
And totally.
Right?
And it's like a thing. It's just something about, like, it taught me a tremendous amount about just, like, the brain.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, right? Yeah, because, like, the brain is somewhat of a muscle as well, right? It's all about muscle memory.
Yeah.
Right?
And the other thing is all of those years playing music with those guys and all of the time in the Murder City Devils that I mean, I would do things like sing the lyrics from one song to the wrong song
really?
At a show and just like blank out on huge sections of lyrics and stuff. And no one ever criticized me for that. No one in the band ever said to me, "You need to get your shit together."
Right.
Which would have been totally reasonable to say.
Yeah.
And no one ever did that. And I think that it's a really, for me, that's like a really beautiful thing. And it's like, it makes me really appreciate those guys.
Well, it still works, right? I mean, if it's working, then why fuck with it?
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, I've seen you guys play a handful of times. I've watched, you know, numerous videos of your live shows and things like that. I think one of my favorite shows I saw you guys at was when you reunited and played Capitol Hill Block Party.
Uh-huh. Yeah,
what was
that really
six
fun.
Years ago? Maybe?
I think it was probably longer, but it might have been 6 years
eight
ago.
8 years ago?
Probably eight.
Something like that?
Yeah.
But it was the first Capitol Hill Block Party I ever went to. And I just remember like standing there. We were way, 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 way in the back. Me and my wife and a couple of friends. And I just remember watching you play because the first song, you jumped so you were convulsing so quickly up there, for lack of a better term, that you had unplugged the microphone.
Oh yeah.
And then it's like, you know, working to get that thing plugged back in and then just going straight back into it. And I remember watching you and going, I would shit myself if I were to ever talk to that guy because he is on another plane.
Oh,
you know, well, and like, and this is the thing, and this is where I'm going with this, is like bringing it back to this fear discussion, right? Is like getting over getting over these stupid little things, making yourself focus on other activities to get you through, right? And now you're back here in the backyard. We're talking. You're a normal person. But goddamn, did you have some major stage presence, my friend?
Well, people have always come. I mean, that was when we first started. That was like in whenever someone would write about us. Because I was just like this sort of pudgy kid, and I didn't dress the way the other guys did, and mm-hmm. I didn't whatever. Like I wasn't like a composed, handsome front guy. I was sure. Like this, and in the articles, it would always be like that. The first Kathleen Wilson at The Stranger, who uh-huh. I love, who was at The Stranger at the time, who's a great lady who I like very much.
Yeah.
Said that the singer looked like Mr. Peabody. That was the first time we ever had written up in the paper. And then people would always say that I look like a Microsoft employee.
Sure.
A
little disheveled.
Yeah.
The big glasses. Yeah, yeah. Yeah. I see yeah. That.
But, you know, I mean, I was still wearing the clothes that, like, my mom bought for me because we were going to a wedding or something.
Yeah, yeah.
You know? That was just my style or whatever.
Yeah,
And it's funny, but because I relate, I mean, I can, but I enjoy the fact that I can, like, sit down and, like, I can, like, go out to dinner and have a civilized conversation and be gentle with people and then go on stage and be this other thing that I don't see as someone else. I see it complete. Yeah. I don't, like... Because sometimes, like, people will, performers will talk about how, like, when they are on stage or something, that's, like, not really them, that they're sort of playing a character or something. And I don't feel like that at all. I feel like it's totally me, and that the almost the purpose of it is to open up and allow for it to be as much a not super conscious experience as possible, to just open up and let whatever come through you, and that's the only way. That's sort of in my mind, that's the only way to do it. And sometimes that happens, and sometimes it doesn't. But it's like a. But that
did you start when you started playing or started being a vocalist with Dan and Derek? Were you always doing that, or was that something that you had to get comfortable with doing on stage?
I was always doing it. I had to learn. I used meanness as sort of a defense mechanism and a tool that became outmoded at some point.
Uh-huh.
And I don't, you know, I was probably mean to people in the audience in ways that were not positive. At the same time, I feel like that there is a history of, there's a play. I feel like for sometimes in the past when I've behaved on stage in ways that I was regretful of in the immediate afterwards, in hindsight, I feel like that there has to be people doing that in the world. And sometimes I feel regretful that it's me, but at the same time, emotionally regretful, intellectually sort of like looking at it from outside of myself, I sort of think like, well, someone has to do it.
Right.
You know,
right.
Someone has to like go on stage and fucking tell people to fuck off and eat shit.
Yeah, yeah.
And I don't know why I don't know why someone needs to do that, but I think that someone does. And then I've loved.
Is that just something that like just happens in the moment?
Yes.
Because as you're talking about this, I'm thinking back to your Sasquatch appearance.
Yes. I felt
which
horrible.
I thought was...
It took me weeks to get over that or longer. It's one of those things where if I can look at it from outside of myself,
uh-huh.
I'm like, great. But in that, the 24 hours after that was like a very, very low time for me. And then it was a very low time, and I was getting a lot of attention because what you don't think, I mean, because those people that go to Sasquatch, they lived in my neighborhood. You know what I mean? They came in, like, I had a store, and they came into my store.
The antique store, yeah.
Yeah, and people, and the thing that was funny is you would see the different ways that people interpreted it, and aside from the photographer that I sort of assaulted or felt, like, she sort of felt like she was attacked by me or whatever, which I understand. I talked to her. I totally understand where she was coming from. I have no issues with that. I'm totally apologetic to her in a way that I'm completely sincere about. But different, all aside from that woman, that single woman, I got exclusively positive feedback.
Well, that's what I was gonna say. I looked at it like, yeah, man, right on. You know? And I think that's how most people looked at it. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just like, yeah, speak truth. Truth to power. Like, you know, and that's the beautiful thing about being in a popular band is that you can do shit like that and still just be like, yeah. You know? Like,
I mean, I was so drunk. I was not.
Oh, were you?
I don't know. I mean, I wasn't. I can't say necessarily that I was truly. I wasn't necessarily blacked out the whole time, but there's definitely my memory of the whole thing very spotty. And but you know, the thing is, I sometimes feel there's part of me that feels very hostile towards American culture and towards sort of like society in general. And
well,
if I'm standing on that stage and looking out at the Sasquatch crowd, it's very easy for me to think like, well, these aren't all awesome people. And then it's easy for me to be like, fuck these people.
Yeah.
Who the fuck are all these fucking people? Why would so many fucking people want to intentionally go all to the same place? And I mean, this is a very ungenerous way of thinking or whatever. And then just like...
And then just go from there. It spirals from there. It spirals out of control from there. Yeah. Well, I mean, the music itself personifies that a little bit. Don't you think? I mean, the Murder City Devils is, you know, it's not tame music, right? There is anger in there. There's angst in the lyrics that you have written for this as
That's true. It's true. And, I think about something that I that I think about recently is that when I go see bands that are like fun and like positive feeling, like it's like they look like they're having fun and and they're playing like nice, like I don't know, like I just think like, oh, like that would be really cool.
That would be great.
You know, and then I think, I wonder why I can't do that.
Yeah.
But I can, I think.
Are you not having fun on stage?
Oh, oftentimes I'm having a blast.
Okay.
But not always. Yeah, it's just sometimes I am and sometimes I'm not. But I'm currently in a much more positive place. And also, I feel like now I'm in a place where I can be engaged with the audience in a way that's like... active and real without being negative.
Like
be excited that we're all there together and be excited that people are having fun, even though that's like it's maybe not fun. Like just appreciate that people are enjoying themselves, appreciate the fact that there's a whole bunch of people and they're there. Like, so one of the reasons I had to stop being mean to the audience is because when you're opening, when people don't really know you and you're like the opening band, then it's one thing. But then when people are coming to see you and they're excited to see you and they're there because they like you, and then you're like, fuck you guys, that's not cool. You know, that's not nice. Like,
well, the shtick, like, yeah, the shtick wears off after a while, right?
Totally. And then also when you find yourself, if you're being negative and you feel like you're faking it,
mm-hmm.
then that sucks.
Yeah, because then you're just being a dick, right?
Yeah, you're just being a dick. If you are a dick.
A dick.
If you're in it.
Then
if
people
really
know that.
If you really is who you are, then that's one thing. But when you're like, when you think about it and you're like, oh, fuck, I'm being a dick and I'm not even sincere about it.
Well, see,
like, that's lame.
Yeah, you know what just came to mind is that you've seen the movie Dig, right? The documentary.
Haven't, actually.
Really?
I'm familiar with some of the characters.
Brian Jonestown Massacre. I can't remember his. Anton, whatever. Mm-hmm. And then Taylor, or whatever his name is. From
Dandy Warhols.
Dandy Warhols, yeah. They're both dickheads.
Mm-hmm.
One is such a dick that his antics have garnered them a lot of, you know, good praise.
Yeah.
And people go to the shows just to see him be a dick. A lot of, you know, and the other guy, Taylor from the Dandy Warhols, is just a fucking straight up dickhead who thinks he's God's gift to pop music, right?
Uh-huh.
And he's kind of fallen off the edge of the planet. Right, so you walk a real there's a tightrope walk that you're balancing on there.
Well, there's also a thing like that we don't talk about anymore. But when we were like we were always around band people. Most of our friends were in bands. We were always touring, so we're always around all these bands.
Mm-hmm.
And there was sort of a like kind of the worst thing that you could say about another band is like, oh well, they're nice guys. You know,
that's 90s Seattle, right?
Yeah.
Like that's yes.
Yeah.
It took me a long time to get over that.
Not a good band.
Sure.
Nice guys.
Yeah.
And that was like the worst thing you could say.
Yeah.
Like we did not want as the Murder City Devils. When we started, we did not want people to say that. We would rather that people were like, fuck those guys. Their band is awesome.
Yeah. Yeah. Just I can't. I still have that in me a little bit, you know?
Yeah.
Like it's this residual and it's so fucking stupid. Every time we're talking about it right now, every time I'm thinking about it in this context, I'm just like, that is the dumbest fucking thing ever.
Oh yeah.
You know?
Yes.
Because there is still that latent kind of thing from the 90s alternative rock era where you can't be having a good time on stage, and you can't like say, oh yeah, what we're doing is awesome. I mean, we're in a band. This is great. We're making money at being a band. You can't say that.
No. You can't mention money, that's for sure.
No, not at all. Still can't do that.
No.
Yeah. Well, let's do this. Spencer, let's take our second musical break. We're featuring music today from the new album, The White Ghost Has Blood on Its Hands Again. Which is available right now. You can find it at themurdercitydevils.com. Is that the best place to get the album?
Yeah, it's the best. I don't know if it's in stores. We just got the vinyl.
Oh yeah.
For us, it's the best place for you to get it.
Sure. But, or at shows, right?
Get it at a show. But it'll be in record stores too. Also, I assume. I don't know.
I'm loving this. You have no idea how much I'm loving this. All right. second musical break. We'll be right back with more of the Air Raid Podcast for your ears when we return with special guest this week, Spencer Moody of the Murder City Devils. Stay with us.
Yeah.
have anything like that where you come across somebody that would have never thought? You've had to have those run-ins before.
Yeah, I've met people that were, well, I'm bad because I sort of, well, I've made a fool out of myself in just like, just the worst ways in front of people that I just admired so much.
Yeah. Can you give me an example? Well, you don't have to. If you don't want to, you don't have to.
I don't feel like I can tell the story very good, but I'll tell you who it was. We, the Murder City Devils, played two shows with Shane McGowan.
Okay. Yeah.
And, I just, the first night, I just made a fool out of myself in just the harshest way. I kind of had like a, almost like a little, like just like this, like little like 2:30 in the morning, like fit. Like it was just like this so lame, so embarrassing. And then, but we were playing two shows. So I had to go back the next day.
Had you been drinking?
Oh, yeah.
Does this involve drinking again?
Yeah, I mean, everything. Until I quit drinking a year and a half ago, or less than that, about a year ago. We'll just say a year ago I quit drinking.
Congratulations.
Thank you very much. I may drink again, but I have to wait until I can be more responsible or whatever.
Sure,
but,
sure.
Yeah, I was super drunk. I mean, I can't even imagine how drunk I must have been, because if I even made it till 2:30 in the morning, I probably had been drinking since, like, five or something.
Oh, of course.
And I said,
of course, I'm sorry. That came out wrong. Like, because I have the same issue. I'm drinking right now, but I have the same issue. I know what you're, yes.
Yeah, okay. No, that's all. I mean,
just to clarify.
Whatever. Yeah. So I went back the next day, and like one of their guys, one of the, maybe the tour manager or the merch guy or something, I came in the building. He immediately came up to me and he put his hand or arm around my shoulder and he was like, "Hey, Shane doesn't want you to play tonight." And I was just like, "Fuck. Oh my God." And I was like, in my mind, I was like, I understand, you know, like, can I, like, I know, you know, like, whatever, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, and he was like, "Well, Shane wants to talk to you."
Mm-hmm.
And he had his arm around me and it was at the show box. And we were at the very, like, kind of close to the entrance. And we walked the long walk across the dance floor into the back room
area. That's a huge room, too.
Yeah. And it's like, fuck, fuck, fuck.
It's like the Green Mile.
And we, and we go into the little dark back room. And as soon as I enter, like, the dressing room, everyone just erupted laughing.
Oh, my God.
And they were just fucking with me.
Yeah.
And I was just like, oh, my God. It's so awesome. I was like, I felt so much fear.
That's fantastic.
And it was so rad. And it wasn't like then I was, like, in the club or whatever.
Sure.
But it was just like, okay, like, I really respect that.
Yeah,
you know what
I
mean? And they still, I'm sure none of those guys know who the fuck I am, but I'll bet it's, they still have the memory of like screwing with this kid.
Yeah.
And
how old were you?
I must have been probably like 24, 25.
So you did something. You did something the night prior that kind of like was a little bit embarrassing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And they just seized on it and they just tore me apart in the most awesomest way. And there was another time when we were opening for Pearl Jam.
Uh-huh.
It was the second night. The first night we didn't meet any of, we hadn't met any of those guys. Mm-hmm. And we were on stage and I said, so we only ever played three shows with those guys, but people made a big deal out of it because like, as though we like toured with them a bunch just because they're the most famous people we ever played with.
Yeah.
But so I'm on stage and I said,
where was it? Where
I think
was
it
this?
Was Kansas City.
Okay.
And I said, I was talking to Eddie backstage earlier and he said I was going to like it here because Kansas City is a rock and roll town or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
But I was just making that up. And like just a moment later, Eddie walked out onto the stage and took the microphone and said to the audience, "This guy's a liar. I've never talked to this fucking guy in my life. And you can't lie to these people."
On stage?
Yeah, on stage. It was, I mean, it was the largest audience I had ever been in front of.
How many people?
Easily tenfold. I mean, the show was probably like 10 or 15,000 people or 20,000 people. Yeah. It was the opening band, so there's probably half those people there or three quarters of those people. It was I mean, it was huge. I mean, it was terrifying being on that stage. It was just a huge, it was like, you know, it was like a amphitheater or whatever.
Yeah.
And I was so scared, and I took the microphone back and I said, "Are you saying that Kansas City's not a rock and roll town?"
That's the fucking perfect thing you could have ever said.
And then he kind of like smiled at me or something and left. And then afterwards I was like, that was awesome. And I was like, were you, I was kind of like trying to like find out if he was like
just trying joking to fuck with you
or just
something?
Fucking with me. Or I think he was just, I mean, he was fucking with me regardless of where it was coming from in him or whatever.
Sure.
But it was awesome. And then after that, he was like totally awesome
cool.
guy. Great guy. Everyone in the band, super awesome, super generous with us. The next night, they invited some of us on stage to do a song with them.
Yeah,
and it was awesome.
Oh my god, I can't even fucking imagine that though. Like that's like one of my jokes that I do in front of like something that I think is funny in my head, and then I say it at a family reunion, and like it just stops like everybody, and they're like, "That wasn't funny. That was hurtful." Like. No. And then you try to get out of it, but in front of like 15,000 people.
Yeah, and there's so many like in music, there's so many, or in sort of like show business or whatever, there's so many narcissistic people. That,
yes,
I mean, he could have, if it had been the wrong person, he could have just ruined someone's life,
ruined someone's career. Not only their life, I mean, that's career ruining right there, right?
It was really fun. It was really great.
God.
It was,
oh my
and,
god!
And then it's and then also, I feel like then after that, you're like, okay, like now we can just,
now we
like,
can be. That's like getting in a fight with a guy, and then the next day you guys totally. Are best buds. Yeah,
it was really
that's
good.
Fucking insane. So do you now that you guys are touring again, you've been working on this new album, like you've taken some breaks in the past, right?
Yeah. Yes.
What were those breaks because of in Murder City Devils? Was it differences, artistic differences, or did
it was hard.
You guys had a long run.
Well, we sort of had the first time before we broke up.
Mm-hmm.
Which was obviously
what was that 2001?
I think is when we our last tour. We sort of broke up and then did one more tour.
Sure.
And the first tour that I ever came home from knowing that I could potentially make a living being in that band.
Yeah.
The band had already broken up.
Damn it.
So it was sort of like absurd.
Yes. I've heard like bits and pieces of this story.
Basically, it was sort of like a situation where we just were too young and arrogant to be respectful to one another.
Mm-hmm.
And we were together all the time.
Yeah.
And so it was like, and it digressed into open hostility.
Yeah.
And it was just not sustainable. And we were too stupid to just stop and take a look at what was going on and sort of prioritize and
like we can like take a step back and say, hey, we can do this if we can just get along.
Totally. And by breaking up, we broke our contract with Sub Pop. We owed them another record.
Yeah.
So then we didn't. We lost all of our. We didn't lose. We. we lost all of our royalties until we had recouped everything completely.
Oh.
So we sort of screwed ourselves financially. We totally could have made another record without. We could have made a record without talking to each other.
Yeah,
you know what I mean.
Yeah.
We could have just sort of scaled down in a smart way, and we just couldn't, because I think every single person in the band probably thought like, "Well, I'm great. I'll just do something else, and it's immediately
right.
going to be exactly where this is now."
Yeah.
And what I had to learn is the same thing that it's like people have been learning for thousands of years.
Right.
Is that starting over is starting over.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. And so you have to be prepared. Also, as soon as that band broke up, everything I did for years was basically specifically designed to alienate fans of the Murder City Devils, and then I was like confused when they weren't there.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
But it was also great because I was in two bands with this guy Mike Kunkka, who was
I know that name.
He was in this Godhead Silo.
He's
an Enemy Mine, and he's a tremendous bass player who approached music exactly the opposite of the way the Murder City Devils did.
Uh-huh.
And I learned a tremendous amount by playing with him, and I'm very proud of the records that we made.
Yeah.
And actually, so there were two bands. There was Dead Low Tide and Smoke that I was in with Mike. And I think either of those bands could have been totally successful, but for reasons that were basically out of our control, one of them lasted long enough to sort of build up.
Sure.
But
sure.
But the lesson I learned is that if you're starting over, then you just have to be ready to start out in someone's basement again.
Oh yeah.
You know, for no money, and work it out and build from zero.
That's gotta be a hard, that had to have been like a kind of a depressing hit.
Yeah.
Was it?
Well, not really, because it took me sort of years to figure out what was happening.
Uh-huh.
You know, I didn't mind working a regular job.
Sure.
That didn't feel like a bummer to me, really. As long as there was no, as long as those jobs were all like, you know, being a janitor, washing dishes, doing like...
Because you feel like it's supplemental.
Yes,
right?
Totally.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And I feel like I'm getting some like sort of whatever. Also, I need to have a job, because if I don't have a job, then I would just isolate myself.
Sure.
So it's like I had to have a reason to go out in the world and be around people and be social.
Yeah,
and like
yeah.
working in bars and stuff like that was a nice for me, because I could work, get my tips, and then sit. So I was a bar back at the Cha Cha Lounge for a long time.
Uh-huh.
And it was really nice to work, get some money, close down the bar, and then just sit and drink with people that I liked and respected.
Mm-hmm.
So that was nice. What was weird is there was a point a few years later when, I guess it was before Murder City Devils had started playing shows again, where I was living in New York and totally floundering musically. I was doing some music that I liked, but I was collaborating mostly with someone in Seattle.
Mm-hmm.
So there wasn't really much to I was sort of honing some skills and stuff in a way that was nice, that was good for me, and I sort of started to write some poems, and I was doing some visual art that I liked. But I would turn on the TV at night, our little teeny TV with like the antenna taped to the wall, and it would be like Modest Mouse, who started out basically at the same time we did.
Mm-hmm.
And then Dan Bellucci was in that band at the time, and they'd be on TV, and then the Shins would be on TV, and like all these people that like I was like I was part of that.
Yeah.
And then I wasn't, and I was broke, yeah, and depressed, and it felt like these other people had just moved on in an organic way that I felt like I could have moved on that way also.
Sure.
If circumstances had been a little bit different, or if I had just been a little bit more thoughtful. And but the consolation with that is that I was tremendously proud of those people.
Yeah.
And yeah, also felt very deeply, and I still feel this, that what I'm about to say, I'm not sure how it comes across. I don't know if it comes across as like tremendously arrogant and inappropriate, uh-huh, but I felt like their success was my success. Like, I felt like seeing Dan, who's one of my best and oldest friends, who I love so much, be able to do that, I felt like that was me also. I felt like I was able to take some of that success for myself because I respected and cared for those people.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and like
I think that's a totally natural way to feel about it too. I think that's totally normal. Like,
yeah.
Like, I've seen a lot of my friends, you know, have been successful with different things. And like, I mean, yeah, you get there's a sense of pride there, right?
Yeah, totally.
Because you were a part of it.
Yeah. Yeah.
You are, you know, even though it's maybe just a friendship, mm-hmm, for somebody like me or for like you, where it was like, you guys started out together. Dan, yeah, probably wouldn't be the guitar player he is today without being in a band with some of the guys he started out with, right?
Yeah, I mean,
like,
yeah,
he could be like a jazz musician right now. know?
Yeah.
Yeah, so I think that's a totally normal way to be, man. But man, that's a very mature way to be as well, because I've also been in the situation where I see my friends succeed at something and I'm just like, motherfucker, why didn't that happen to me? You know?
Yeah, but now like years have passed and I see there's drawbacks to those kinds of success also.
Sure.
And yeah, also, you know, we were able to, Murder City Devils started playing shows again together and it was fun and we were...
Now, was the first time that you guys started back together, was that Capitol
I think that
Hill
was the
block party show
yeah,
right? Yeah.
Yeah, I think that was like kind of the very first one.
Yeah, yeah.
So that was really fun.
How did that go? I mean, how did like getting back, because you guys did have some pretty major differences, right? Like,
yeah,
getting back
but
together,
we didn't
like,
necessarily have major differences. We just were immature and not nice to each other.
Sure. Okay. Yeah.
You know, and then
so getting back together wasn't like a big emotional deal for
not really.
For you? Yeah.
It was sort of like more of a like, we just had to remember to keep each other and ourselves, mm-hmm, in check as far as,
sure,
like,
yeah.
I don't know. And also we all knew that that was the only way that, I don't know, we just got older.
Yeah.
That's all.
You grew
it
up.
It only took a couple more years because,
yeah,
we were, you know, probably when the band broke up, we were in like, kind of like maybe like 24, 25.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, what I know now is that that's really young. And when we started, and also from the age 19 to the age 25, a person changes a lot.
Mm-hmm.
And, or potentially a lot, or hopefully a lot. And we started out with an agenda. And the agenda was to just push through and just force ourselves on the world and force ourselves to have some degree of success.
Right.
And
right.
So we were all sort of in that together. And then as soon as it started to feel like we were having success, then it fell apart because we had nothing in common anymore.
Yeah.
We started out with this idea that we were all in it together. And as soon as we started to do well, we weren't in it together anymore.
Yeah.
But I'm sort of proud of the fact that we quit when we couldn't hang out together anymore.
I think that's actually a really strong point. You know, I mean, that's fantastic, because a lot of bands don't do that.
We could have agreed to dislike each other.
Sure.
And then done what was best to whatever.
And then you ruin that relationship forever.
Totally.
Right?
Yeah.
It's like a, you know, what's more important to you? You know, the success or the relationship?
Yeah.
You know, that's a, wow. Yeah. Dude.
But... whatever, you know.
Yeah. Well, you guys are back at it again.
Yeah.
You know, and you made a new album. And it's fucking fantastic.
Thank you.
Yeah. Like I told you in the kitchen, man, it was like, this is like listening to this album, it was like, holy shit, man, Murder City Devils. This is Murder City Devils.
Yeah. It is.
Yeah. So congratulations.
Thank you.
Yeah. Are you happy?
Yeah. I am. this is like starting a tour, having the record and, like starting a tour and stuff. It's very, it's like hectic and it's like, I mean, I'm tired and, I miss my wife and I miss my dog.
Yeah.
But I can't imagine how things would be going better. Sure. You know what I mean? Things are going great. Everything's like it should be, and it's cool.
Yeah. Was it hard to jump back in? To like doing these shows and stuff, and so I mean,
you know, it's easier than it has been in the past, the last few years, and also since I quit drinking, it's actually a lot easier.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I'm a lot more, because I'm aware of what's going on. Like it was like the wrong, it's like sort of what I was talking about before about being on stage and you sort of want it to just sort of like come through you. When your drunkenness is a way, there is a way to achieve, there's a degree of sort of transcendence that can come from being wasted, but it's limited.
Sure.
There's sort of a ceiling on it because it's not completely, you've fabricated it out of something material.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so it's a great tool until it's not. And that now being able to go on stage and be able to actually have a clear idea of what's happening in the room and, my memory is better, and I'm able to just cope in a healthier way.
Yeah.
But there were, I didn't, there's been times, there's been sections of the existence of the band where I've just really dreaded it, gotten horrible anxiety. Like, because the way that I'll deal with knowing we're going on tour is I will not think about it at all.
Until
I will
happens.
Not prepare for it. I will not think about it. And there were times in the last, like a, maybe more like around the time of like the Sasquatch show and stuff like that, where in knowing, like I would start acting like kind of like being a jerk and being cranky and being unhappy.
Yeah.
And not knowing why. And then my wife would say, are you nervous about the shows that are coming up? And I wasn't thinking about the shows at all.
Right, right.
And just being like, oh, that's what's wrong with me.
That's totally it.
That's completely it.
Yeah.
And sort of like having, like if someone would, like it would kind of make me pissed off if people would ask about it because they're bringing up something that I was working so hard
and
to suppress.
And you tell them to shut up. Yeah. You go, shut up, no. Yeah. Yeah.
And I got over that.
Yeah.
But so now I still don't think about it very much, but I just know we've done it so many times.
Yeah.
And it always is fine. It's always fine.
Yeah.
And so I just have to remember it's not important and it's always fine.
Yeah.
So whatever.
It's going to be great.
Yeah.
Right?
And it can be great and it can be very enjoyable and it's very... I really am truly appreciative that I get to do something that, like, it's something that other people, like, that people romanticize and people would like to be able to do mm-hmm. that don't have the option of doing it. And the fact that I have the option of doing it means that I should appreciate it and that I should be think of it as that I'm doing it for myself, but I'm also doing it for people that don't have the option of doing it.
Yeah. Yeah. I like that. Thank you so much for coming.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah. I really appreciate it.
Yeah.
On tour right now. Go and see him live. It's an amazing show. Thank you so much, Spencer.
Thanks a lot.
Yeah. And remember, you can find us at www.air-raid.net. Go and check out all of the archived episodes right there just by pressing the archive tab. And you can check out all 209 episodes with Macklemore, Bob Saget, David Bazan of Pedro the Lion. How about Mudhoney, Death Cab for Cutie? All sorts of great stuff up there. Jim Brewer, Pete Holmes, Mike Birbiglia, great comedians, great musicians right there at www.air-raid.net. You can also find us on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, and CairoRadio.com. Thanks again for listening this week, everybody. We'll be back next time. Next Monday, we're going to go out today with, this great song from the new album, The White Ghost Has Blood on Its Hands Again by the Murder City Devils. Not everybody gets a good time. Have a great weekend.
Mistake.